From Nightingale, by New York Times bestseller David Farland. She entered the Mastiff's mines and began to search. They were supposed to hold her until the hunters came, maul her if she tried to escape. Their masters had trained the dogs well. But a dog's memories were not like human memories, thick and substantial. Summer drew all of the memories to the surface, hundreds of hours of training, all bundled into a tangled web, and snapped them, as if passing her hand through a spider's web. Immediately, all three Mastiffs began to look around nervously. One lay down at her feet and whimpered, as if afraid she might be angry. "Good dogs," Summer whispered, tears of relief rising to her eyes. "Good." She rolled to her knees, felt her stomach muscles bunch and quaver. She prepared to run.
"Where do you think you're going?"
a deep voice asked.
"There are more dangerous things than Mastiffs," Summer knew.
From The Greenstone Grail, by Amanda Hemingway. At the hub of the circle, a slight form developed slowly. It seemed to be the epitome of innocence and purity, until she saw its eyes. Its eyes were old.
"You were never one for these games," the child remarked. "What do you want of me, fat one?"
"Perhaps you have heard something of a certain water spirit."
"A water spirit?"
With one of the quick change moods of childhood, the small face grew suddenly serious.
"There are no spirits in the waters anymore. The last mermaid died long ago. Still, they say that in the deepest, darkest places..."
"The river here is neither deep nor dark," said Bartleby. "But something stirs in the water."
The child was silent a moment, then began to chant.
"Eyes in the mirror, dark as the room. Eyes in the water, deep as the tomb. Feet tread the river, hands pluck the tide. Death from the deep sea swims up the glide."
From The Dubliners, by James Joyce.
"Her name sprang to my lips at moments in strange prayers and praises which I myself did not understand. My eyes were often full of tears. I could not tell why. I did not know whether I would ever speak to her or not. But my body was like a harp, and her words and gestures were like fingers running upon the wires. At last, she spoke to me. When she addressed the first words to me, I was so confused that I did not know what to answer. She asked me, was I going to Araby? I forgot whether I answered yes or no. It would be a splendid bazaar. She said she would love to go. And why can't you?" I asked. While she spoke, she turned a silver bracelet round and round her wrist. She could not go, she said, because there would be a retreat that week in her convent. The light from the lamp opposite our door caught the white curve of her neck, lit up her hair that rested there, and, falling, lit up the hand upon the railing. It fell over one side of her dress and caught the white border of a petticoat, just visible as she stood at ease.
"It's well for you," she said.
"If I go," I said, "I will bring you something."
From Red Serpent, The Falsifier, by Delson Armstrong.
"Don't forget this, O wise king. I know your secret," Aiden said. The king halted.
"No one can destroy me."
"You will surely die," he said, "for he is coming. The falsifier is born."
"What did you say?"
Anaxagoras's voice faltered for a moment. Aiden laughed at the sudden weakness he saw in the king. He saw the end coming, but was no longer afraid to die. In his mind's eye, he saw the savior of the humans and the vampires alike. Now he was ready to accept his death. With one swift move, the king slashed his chest open.
"I will be ready."
The king turned around, leaving his enemy to die, and disappeared into a mist.
"You will be sorry,"
He breathed out his last and smiled as he entered the Eternal.